It's been another extraordinary week in British politics.
We have seized back control from a Prime Minister who is behaving like a dictator more than a Democrat.
Purged of its moderates, the Tory party swung wildly to the authoritarian right.
It is Jeremy Corbyn's surrender bill. That's what it is. It means running up the white flag. The bill's shameful.
21 of Johnson's own MPs, including Winston Churchill's grandson and two former chancellors, have been booted out.
After 37 years as a Conservative Member of Parliament, I've voted against the government three times in 37 years, and I've had the whip removed.
Welcome to the Another Europe podcast with me, Luke Cooper from Anglia Ruskin University, and my co-host Zoe Williams from The Guardian. On today's show, we talk to the economist James Meadway and the Labour MP Lloyd Russell Moyle. We also take in the atmosphere at one of the now daily protests taking place in the face of Britain's democratic crisis, catching up with Michael Chesham and Anna Oppenheim from the Another Europe office. I started talking to James in the park while Zoe was en route.
So, James, former economics advisor to John McDonnell, and now activist, campaigner, strategist, man about town.
I'm meant to be writing a book, and I was meant to get it done before. Yeah, you have to have written a book to be an author. I was meant to get it done before the election, which is now looking optimistic, to say the least.
You've got one or two things on your plate now, but we look forward to inviting you back on the show when you publish the book. Thanks for coming on and welcome. Maybe we could just start in these plush surroundings of Westminster. If you hear any children screaming in the background, you know why, listeners. Give us a rundown. It's now Thursday late afternoon, and it's been a pretty crazy week in British politics. So what on earth has just happened?
It's quite hard to run down absolutely everything, but the big events are, seems like a long time ago, especially a week and a bit ago, Boris Johnson moved to prorogue Parliament, got the Queen's permission, as per our glorious unwritten constitution, to do that. That means that Parliament will be radically curtailed in the amount of time it gets to debate anything before 31st of October, when we're due to leave the EU. They claim that they want to have a Queen's speech and present new bills and all this sort of thing, but everybody and their dog realises that this was done entirely, as the Telegraph report had it a couple of days ago, to run down the clock. In other words, you kind of squeeze out the amount of time that anybody has to try and change anything or potentially block a no deal or remove the threat of no deal, and therefore you sharpen, this is I think their strategy, sharpen MPs' minds on the prospect of no deal and use that as a blackmail threat to get a deal through. The deal they'll get, it will be almost identical. I mean, it would be pretty much literally identical to what Theresa May had. There's no serious prospects of getting a renegotiation on anything fundamental from the EU without an election or another referendum or something fairly serious like this. Even then, the actual amount of variation you get might be quite limited.
So you're still in the camp of people who thinks that this is really, which I think I'm in as well, that this is really a ruse to create an electorally advantageous situation. It's not a serious attempt at no deal.
Boris Johnson will go for a no deal if it looks like he can hold the Tory party together in that. If it looks like he can zap the Brexit party, and if it's just what they're going to present people, we're enacting the will of the people, this is what it looks like. He doesn't want to do that because he is still Conservative Prime Minister. He does have to have some reference to what, for example, British capitalism in general would like to see happen. And that does not include bar some sort of fringe elements, a no-deal Brexit. This is like quite high up on the list of things that people really, really don't want to see. And it's not just that, you know, the chaos of no-deal, which they'll manage. I mean, I do trust still more or less our civil service and the structures in this society to kind of manage with some of the problems. It's still difficult. There'll still be things that go wrong that will be unexpected. But it's also the longer term impact of this, and this has not quite been considered enough. It's not that you do no deal and you float off and do whatever you like. You're still going to have to write a trade deal of some form with the EU. The US, they're not going to rescue you. They're not going to make everything nice for you. You'll get some fairly awful trade deal with them. Awful for most people here. Awful when you strip out most of the protections on food standards and this sort of thing in particular.
Let's be clear, there's an opportunity to do a great free trade deal with the United States, and the President is very gung-ho about that, and so am I.
So no deal looks bad all round. They don't want to do it, they will do it if they have to, and I think that's why it's quite a serious threat. And I guess that the hope is you restrict the amount of parliamentary time, you run down the clock, and at the last possible minute on, you know, what is it, 17th of October or thereabouts, you, or 16th, you present the MPs with it's either this or no deal. And then they vote for it, and then you deliver a deal. At that point, you look pretty good if you're Prime Minister Boris Johnson. You say, I did Brexit. It wasn't no deal. The naysayers be damned. The investment that's been held back because of the uncertainty of all this suddenly rushes forward. So that's probably their plan there. What's happened in the last few days is that this got derailed. I think prorogation was a serious error. The first really big one that Boris Johnson's made, which was to do something which is partly right. It is correct to think that large numbers of people have a deep contempt for Parliament and MPs for all sorts of reasons. He talks to anyone, actually. They'll say expenses scandal. They'll say, you know, subsidised bars. It's just general contempt for Parliament and the way it's behaved, which has been reinforced by what's happened in the last 3 years, by the way, particularly for people who voted Leave, I would say. So they wanted to play up to that by saying Parliament is trying to block all of this. We'll close down Parliament. The trouble is, you then hit on something even deeper than the contempt people have for Parliament, which is the respect they have for democracy. And I think that becomes very apparent. Look at the polling and prorogation. It's really unpopular. 23% of people support it, 50% oppose. But you can see the demonstrations. You can see the fillip it's suddenly given. And the way in which suddenly a Remain argument, which is a losing argument because you stand on the side of the people who want to keep things the same, right? That's the problem. It turns into an argument that, where you're on the front foot and you can say, actually, we're the people who are doing something really important, which is supporting democracy, opposing prorogation. And that's a point where you can see, like, everything starts to move into play for Labour and the opposition parties led by Labour. And it's allowed Labour to take a lead on this. So then you get the second parliamentary thing, which is getting through a motion to expand the amount of time that Parliament has, change the order paper so they can present a bill, the Benn bill, written by Hillary Benn and others, presented by them, but that's what it got named, which basically says we will take no deal off the table. It will be made illegal for the government to try and pursue this. The government don't want this discussed. They've tried many, many ruses to avoid getting it discussed, including late last night, filibustering the House of Lords, forcing through hundreds of amendments so people had to vote continuously. That's now failed. It now looks like the bill will be voted into law late Friday, maybe, possibly early Monday. The government response to that was then to present a motion saying we will have a general election, which Labour said they will not vote for. Other opposition parties said they will not vote for because they want decisively no deal taken off the table before they want a general election. That's the argument that they're presenting.
Yep, and Zoe's arrived on her bike.
While we were talking, the Prime Minister was having yet another day to forget. He was heckled on the campaign trail in Leeds while his own brother resigned from the government and from Parliament.
When you're planning to resign?
I haven't got any further comment to say other than it's been an honour to be MP for Orpington and a minister under three governments, but it's time to move on.
Has the Johnson-Cummings axis of evil overstepped the mark, and is the expulsion of 21 very senior Tories an indication of that, or could it possibly still be part of their plan?
Yes, they have overstepped the mark. I mean, sort of touching this, the prorogation thing was the first point in a while where it felt like it's not necessarily a Remain thing, and that's kind of quite important. I think the idea that we're defending democracy, that you shouldn't be pushing Parliament around like this, that actually in a sense it's more visceral than, you know, slightly abstract thing, we like democracy. It's bullying. I mean, that's like the defining tone of this administration from the top down. If you read like Dominic Cummings' personal behaviour, getting staff, senior staff from somebody else's department, senior political advisor, marched out with with an armed guard, screaming at MPs, swearing, you know, all this sort of thing. It's bullying. It's continual bullying. And now they're trying to bully Parliament. People can see that. So, yeah, they really overstepped the mark at that point, and it allowed everybody else to take the initiative away from the government. In terms of the MPs being expelled and things, I think it's like, do people care that much? Swathes of people out there, do they really care about what's happening in Parliament? Not really. Do they care about MPs being expelled? Not greatly. Does it look good for the government? Is it a positive for the government at all? Not really either. The upside in this is limited in the extreme at this point in time, particularly if you were thinking, you know, there's 4 million Tory Remain voters in 2016. You've sent the clearest possible signal that you just don't want their votes, right? So from that point of view, it looks bad. But if your plan was to get to somewhere where you go, like, actually, we don't care about those votes, we're going to bludgeon this through as, like, this is the Brexit party, and that's how we're going to scoop up votes in the next election, it looks fine. I mean, I think having made a serious miscalculation and lost the initiative, that's why you can see the chaos and all the rest around number 10 and what they're doing at the minute. We're up against a dangerous adversary. It's not the case that you kind of knock them once and then they just roll around and you win. It's like they are trying to pull back again. They are trying to come up with different ways to knock us off course, including the current one of presenting a bill to call an early election and then sort of daring you to vote for it. Like, it's a game of chicken, which is what they're trying to call Jeremy Corbyn at this point in time. Now, Labour's position and the other opposition party's position is to say we won't vote for an early election until no deal has been taken off the table and we don't trust Boris Johnson not to, like, you know, we call an election, he suddenly changes the date and rams through no deal anyway. So that's the position at the minute. The danger in that is that having spent a long time saying we want an election, we're now back into kind of parliamentary manoeuvres and things, which most people just don't, frankly, just don't see. Right? It's like, okay, there's some stuff going on. It doesn't filter down to what's happening. It's just, why is Jeremy Corbyn not having a general election? And I think we need the momentum on our side, small M, and we're going to get that if we go pretty rapidly.
I just come from The Guardian, where there are still people who think that this is all part of the Cummings-Johnson master plan. Can it be? What do you... I mean, you know, could this be what they're actually aiming for?
What, the expulsion of MPs and things? Yeah. It was probably on their list of things that would happen. They knew that if they said this, they had to follow through on the threat, so they'd reckoned for MPs going. It's probably bigger than they're anticipating. But also, let's not fall into the trap of, like, this stupid Westminster thing. Everyone going around saying, oh, you know, this evil genius plotting away in number 10. Whatever, he's just a shouty, arrogant bully. There's been plenty of them in number 10 before. A shouty, arrogant bully with a very, very long series of blog posts where he tends to talk about science and Nietzsche and God knows what else, right? So that's what we're dealing with. He does bring certain skills and certain determination to make this happen. That's the big thing here. But let's not get carried away that we're all on the wrong side of a 5D chess game. This could still work out well for them, right? It could. It's not the case that they've just messed up and now we're going to win. They've already just seen the news. They're going to try and represent a motion for an early election, I think, pretty rapidly, either tomorrow or Monday, that kind of thing. So they want to stoke up this idea. Jeremy Corbyn isn't calling the election because he's backing away from it, because he's scared, because the point at which you don't want an election, you're the opposition, the point you go, well, you're not calling it because you think you're going to lose, aha, and then you're on the front foot as the government all of a sudden. So that's where they want to get to. I would call their bluff.
Yeah, and I would guess that he thought the threat of losing the whip would have reduced the rebellion.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 21 is still quite big if they knew that they were going to be expelled from the party.
So let's go back to that. When all of us want to see the election, James, you go first because you're the guest.
As soon as possible. Yeah. There is a case for delay, but delay no longer than strictly necessary. Look, there's a deep frustration, and it's not just sort of Leave voters, it's people who voted Remain as well, at the way in which this has dragged on for so long now. I mean, Brexit has dragged on, and it's just interminable, and they want that out of the way. And the only way to sort of resolve the blockage is really you get an election, you change the makeup of Parliament, and then you see if you can resolve the blockage. That's the obvious democratic thing to do. So the sooner we can get to that, the better. The longer things drag out, the more it turns into, particularly for Labour, you start to look as bad as the other lot, and the government can suddenly posture as, like, we're the people versus Parliament at this point. We're against the elite who are trying to, you know, block Brexit and mess around and do all this weird stuff, because let's face it, parliamentary language is just arcane and weird, and the procedures, you completely lose track of the whole thing. That's where they want to get to. If Jeremy Corbyn and Labour want to win, they have to look like the insurgents.
Absolutely.
In this one, right? And that means you have to be ready to go quickly on the election, and you want to do it soon. Now, there are cases, there is a genuine national interest case for saying some degree of delay is there, but let's not, you know, if people are talking about getting into December or something, this is nonsense.
Yeah, the cabinet members, not shadow cabinet, Tories, have come out very clearly and said they think it will get royal assent on Friday, the no deal legislation, and that there will be another vote on election on Monday. And I think Labour should back that vote. I have to say there's lots of discussions going on in our circles. I know James is a Eurosceptic, we're the crazy Europhiles here.
James is closer to our...
No, I know.
We're all socialists.
We're all socialists, exactly. In the Remain circles, I have to say there are lots of discussion going on about delay, and in the Parliamentary Labour Party. And it takes different forms, but I'm afraid quite a bit of it is finding clever ways to try and get round the issue if you want to stop Brexit. Brexit, you have to democratically win an election.
Yeah.
And there's no clever way around it. There's no piece of legislation you can find or pass because Parliament can't bind its successors. If Johnson wins the election with a large majority, he will have the power to do what he wants.
But
and
I,
to be honest, he probably should.
I don't think I disagree with any of that. And actually, if I'm saying I would prefer to see it after the 31st of October than before, I'm not talking about a delay of more than a fortnight. I wouldn't want to kick it into December. The case I would say for after the 31st is really just pragmatic. Firstly, all this stuff about them being frit, which really super irritates me, or chicken, or anything else, that evaporates. The minute the election's called, nobody can remember who wanted it when. Secondly, Southside isn't ready. There are candidates that haven't been selected. Many candidates haven't been selected. They're not ready. And I think we would have a kind of internal democratic deficit if it were a complete rush job, because that would be just centrally imposed candidates. And I think you would have a deficit at the level of the CLP in people not having any say in who their candidate was. Thirdly, you know, there is a massive thing with young voter registration, and that does hang on the beginning of university terms. And I do not want to see all those kind of concentrations of what are naturally Labour votes lost because it happened too fast. Fourthly, Boris's numbers really go down if he doesn't do what he promised to do, which is get us out on the 31st of October. So we really, it's an open goal to put him in a position of fighting as the person who broke a promise on the 7th of November. And I think four is my number of reasons.
Okay, I'll take that in reverse. I mean, the issue with Boris Johnson not delivering Brexit, yes, it kind of makes him, it says do or die, right? He still has the option, he will play this, as like, I attempted to do this, but these parliamentarians blocked me from doing what I wanted. I did my best. I had to close down Parliament. I had to do that, that, that. You go through a list. So he can still play it quite obviously, I think, that way. So I don't think the advantage will be quite as big. It's very, very tempting to drag him out, to force him to look pathetic. He does look like a failure. I mean, he's lost, what, 100% of every vote he's trying to have. You know, it's a disastrous record for a prime minister. Drag that out, make him look worse and worse. But the issue with the dragging it out more generally is there's a practical bit, and it reflects something you touched on, is that we're already in an election campaign, right? We may as well assume we're already there. But it's not one that's been declared, and that means it's not subject to the usual controls, right? The government will now be fighting this as if it's a slightly weird election campaign where they can do and say anything they want. They can get out announcements as government. The restrictions on airtime, the balance issues, the stuff that Labour used very successfully in 2017 doesn't apply, right? So, and they'll be fighting that. And the longer they can do that as effectively running an election campaign without the rules, the better. Now, one of the things that did concern me, and it seems to have emanated from the, you know, the throbbing genius brain of Dominic Cummings, was that potentially they just won't declare purdah if there is an election campaign. In other words, government closes down for the duration of a campaign, an election or whatever, basically because otherwise government has a huge advantage and be able to say, we're the government and this is our policy and isn't it great, right? And if your civil servants do that, that carries more weight than if the party does that.
That's totally nuts.
It's completely nuts, but it's exactly the sort of thing they do. If there was a way to do it, they will do that, because then they can announce as government, here's all this spending money, here's a big infrastructure announcement, here's whatever, and you say it with the authority of government, not the authority of the Tory party, which is a much bigger thing. So they're going to try, I think they will try and do that if there's a way to do it. The discussions at the centre of the Labour Party and across the movement in general is quite a serious one. And it's not a split, it's basically a sort of tactical question at this point in time, which is exactly as you highlighted, which is that issue of what maximises the... What does two things, actually? One, we don't want a no-deal Brexit, right? And everybody agrees on this. So how do you actually stop that? Two, what then, and this is a political calculation, what then makes it more likely you're going to be able to win the election and get as close as possible? And that's really the consideration there. Now, the first one is, and I think it's a legitimate point, because this is a genuine, entirely national interest point, which is that we really don't want a no-deal Brexit. How do we guarantee that we won't get that? Now, my own feeling in this one is that I don't think Boris Johnson wants a no-deal Brexit, right? He wants to threaten it. He has to credibly threaten it. If we get there, he will do it. But he doesn't actually want this thing, so we're not going to overstate the degree to which he actually just wants to, what do you do, rip the steering wheel out, you know, disable the brakes and just drive straight at the wall, right? He doesn't necessarily want that, so we shouldn't overstate the degree to which he will deliberately try and set the system up to get there. That implies going earlier rather than later, right? That implies less rather than more of a delay.
So what happens now? We discussed the alliances ahead. a big factor there will be the Brexit Party, of course, too, because it looks, thankfully, because we don't want to see an alliance between the centre-right and the far-right in Britain, thankfully that they're not going to be able to get that alliance because the Brexit Party has selected 625 candidates and they said that they will not stand down unless Johnson actively commits to no deal. And he won't be able to get that through the Conservative Party.
What do you, either of you, think about an alliance of Remain forces, even kind of non-aggression pacts, paper candidates, anything like that?
I don't agree with it. I think we will end up with a polarised election, and I think people will make choices in who they vote for on that basis. I don't expect at this point in time to see a sudden upsurge in a Lib Dem vote that will wipe out Labour seats and hand the Tories majority. I think, frankly, people do vote a bit more smartly than that.
If thinking about it, it is a polarised election, but it is polarised between Leave and Remain than between Tory and Labour.
That kind of sets the condition of it, but obviously if you're Labour or any other party really, you want to get out of just talking about Leave versus Remain,
yeah,
right?
Course,
you're going to take that and talk about other things.
But if you accept that the electorate is quite polarised between Leave and Remain, and you accept that there are places where the Remainers should vote one way and places where they should vote another way, if that's their priority, then surely we should just be a bit more mature about it and say, OK, fine.
No, because it's an election, right? We have to have. And if we
it's an election, no maturity allowed.
Well, no, it's not maturity. I think it's particularly mature to say, hey, we've got an election. And when we discuss the entire future of this country, let's all talk about one question only. Right?
No,
that's what Boris Johnson wants.
Yeah, no,
so
sure,
we won't know. We won't do that.
No,
and a sort of Remainer alliance gets you into that, and you can't talk about everything else.
Well, I don't know if that's... I mean, I completely take that point. It does make it difficult for you to talk about an economic programme if you're then saying, vote Lib Dem in the neighbouring constituency. And I wouldn't expect any Labour person to say that explicitly. But it would seem like some obvious cooperation, certainly between Labour and Greens, would be welcome, right?
I would say that on the ground people are going to make their own choices anyway. I mean, you can always speculate about, let's have a big thing we're going to talk about in Westminster and let's do some cunning deal and all that. In practice, people go into the polling booth and they're not stupid. They'll vote for the outcomes they want to get to. And in practice, I would expect to see a large amount of tactical voting. I'd also expect to see, and this is where the Boris Johnson, Dominic Cummings strategy starts to look dubious electorally, is that if you've just basically expelled 21 fairly senior, very senior MPs, where are your 4 million Remain voters going to go? Because you've just said you're not welcome here anymore.
Yeah.
Can you gobble up enough Leave voters, presumably in the sort of northern and midland seats that they're talking about, trying to gobble them up? Can you do enough of that to overcome the losses you're now going to suffer to the Lib Dems elsewhere in the country?
They were relying on the Labour heartland.
Oh, yes. It's not going to happen. Or it could do. But it's not going to happen because we're going to have a good campaign that will actually speak to people's interests. If you look, strikingly, if you look at the sort of breakdown of polling and how people think about different issues, if you take... Because this has to involve targeting basically Labour Leave voters. They need to somehow get people who are Leave voters in 2016 who vote Labour habitually to vote Tory instead. Now, saying it makes me think this is a tough call. You might be able to persuade people to vote Brexit Party as a sort of protest in the European election no one really cares about, but getting them to vote Tory and like habitual Labour voters or people who dropped out of it sometime in the past, there'll be a few people, but not on the scale they need. And if you ask people what they care about, Labour Leave voters, quite rightly, will say the NHS, the economy, jobs, education, all sorts of stuff, and then they'll say Brexit. Long way down the list of things that they care about, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the Tory offering these things? Nothing. What's Labour offer? Pretty solid.
So Labour's campaign is going to change the message. I think what it did last time so well in 2017 is it actually appealed to the transactional voter really successfully, particularly young families, the tuition fee pledge. And while it's not going to be a rerun of 2017, you would expect the same thing to happen again. People look at the offer, £10 minimum wage, free university education, public ownership of utilities, £20 billion a year of investment spending in infrastructure. People are going to go, well, hang on a minute, maybe Brexit isn't the only issue in town, maybe there are other ones. And crucially, Corbyn was very clear this week from the dispatch box that Labour's going to offer what the mainstream Remain campaigns that will be running all of these tactical voting operations on quite a large scale, well, he's given them what they've been asking for several years. So in principle, every Labour candidate who is the most viable one in the local area, and unless they've said actively they're not going to support the party policy, should be supported by those Remain interventions. So, I think that alliance is already in place in a way.
The thing to watch out for is and the other thing is why it's not 2017. I mean, broadly speaking, Boris Johnson does have Theresa May's strategy, which is like, here's a solid Brexit offer and let's talk about, I mean, Theresa May's phrase, burning injustices. Boris Johnson, Dominic Cummings probably don't care too much about burning injustices, but broadly speaking, they want to get to that point of saying we're going
they
to intervene
to pretend
in the coming
they do.
Year. Well, pretend they do. Look, yesterday, Sajid Javid popped up and said £13.8 billion austerity's over. Now, Theresa May kept saying austerity's over and they're not actually ending austerity. This isn't enough to undo the damage, not by a long way. It'll be many years before education spending has even got back to the level it was per pupil in 2010, right? But it is something they're going to say. And it's much more serious than Theresa May's version of the same thing. So if Labour just says, hey, we're going to spend some more money, they've got something on that. We're going to have to take this argument elsewhere if we're talking about the economy. £10 now minimum wage, the £300 billion transfer to workers, share transfer,
also,
all this sort of stuff.
I think I had a bit of an epiphany about this morning, because there's a different... It's not just about the money you promise and the sectors you promise it to. It's about empowerment and agency. So the Tories don't even understand how to give people the impression that they're kind of independent economic agents. It's all like, we'll give you this money to spend on your hospital. And actually, people don't want... It's not... You know, people want to feel like they'll be able to live on their wages under the government. And the Tories don't even understand that impulse, let alone do they understand how to build policy around it, let alone do they understand how to talk about it. So I'm not that worried. People keep talking about Sajid Javid parking his tanks on Jeremy Corbyn's lawn. I don't think he is, because I think when you say to people, OK, we're not going to saddle you with a lifetime's of debt, worth of debt for your tertiary education... That is just kind of much more meaningful than we're going to spend this much more per elderly parent.
And particularly when you won't see the impact of this. They say the spending's released now, it'll turn up next year, right? So it'll be at least next year before you start seeing this.
The Tory turn to austerity, okay, it's a challenge, but I think it's good for Labour, because ultimately it's an issue where this Labour leadership can always outgun the Tories.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like 2015, I'm afraid, where Ed Balls went on all of the TV channels and said we're not going to match the Tories' spending on the NHS.
James is an optimist by temperament, but we thought we'd ask him for his election predictions anyway.
Yes, we are going to win. We should be confident about this. We'll win on the condition, one, our membership, this is a secret weapon, is mobilised. The 500,000 members, plus the data, plus the ground campaign, basically is the secret weapon of 2017. You need that, plus a really solid offer on the economy. If we're going to end up in a sort of remaining position, that's what it looks like. That's what it's going to look like, whatever we say about it. That's what it's going to look like. We need a really solid, radical offer on the economy to say to people, this is how life will be different under Labour. We're not the party of the establishment. We're the real insurgents. This is how we're going to demonstrate that. So yeah, we can win.
At the demonstration, we caught up with Anna Oppenheim and asked her about the week of protest Another Europe Is Possible have organised.
Danny, you must be very tired. It's been a crazy week in the Another Europe office. You've been organising protests every day, right?
Yeah, it's been incredibly busy, and it feels quite surreal, really. Like, when you woke up on a Wednesday morning last week, we didn't really expect a week to go the way it did. We all had our plans, our ideas for events we want to put on, campaigns we want to run. But with the news coming in that Boris Johnson is proroguing Parliament, everything just exploded. We started receiving hundreds of messages a day, people asking to organise protests up and down the country. And our Euro has played a leading role, coordinated in this movement that's just exploded overnight. And yes, every night since last Wednesday, we've had a protest, sometimes multiple actions, as well as trying to coordinate what's happening around the country. So yes, it's been wild.
A lot of conversation focuses on protest and what it achieves in the moment, what it achieves long term, whether it achieves a kind of atmospheric change on the body politic. Do you feel like, I mean, do you wake up every morning thinking this one's going to be the best one, or is that not the point?
I wake up every morning thinking we need to keep going. It's very hard to predict which protest is going to be big, which is going to be smaller, how it's going to go. A few days ago, we were at quite a fairly flat static rally that then turned into a spontaneous march that occupied Westminster Bridge outside of Parliament for hours. So it all depends on the mood on the day. Sometimes there is a new story that just sparks something, people suddenly come out in the streets. But like more than anything, exhausting as it is, it's also been very empowering to see that people actually care.
Hiking across London, we also found a quiet spot in a cafe to catch up with Labour MP Lloyd Russell Moyle.
I do feel honoured to welcome Lloyd Russell-Moyle to the show, not just because he's a great guy, but because Parliament is so crazy that even to have any time at all to talk to us is really kind.
And is also squeezed between votes in Parliament, going to Hastings to do a rally and protest and everything.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Yeah, so thank you. But also, that's like a good lead-in for how crazy is it? How crazy does it feel inside?
I've always said that it feels less crazy for me as someone who is a new person who has only known craziness compared to some of the people who are old hats who are losing their minds on what's happening. I mean, they literally are. And every single, you know, kind of burp from someone across the chamber, suddenly it's on a WhatsApp that, you know, they're in cahoots and there's a new plan and everyone is very on edge in that sense. In the Labour Party particularly, actually, in the last few days we've seen a real unity of purpose. Johnson has really floundered in the Commons. He's really unable to answer specific questions. He's unable to provide focus. You often see him kind of getting distracted midway through a sentence and he'll suddenly look across the other side of the chamber. And of course, there's now a tactic to deliberately try and distract him and make the most of
it. Why, what do you do? Like make shadow rabbits and stuff?
Well, you just shadow rabbits. Make noises and suddenly he kind of looks over and he will get distracted. He's like a school child that has an attention problem. He actually is like that. And that is his weakness. The problem is we need him in the chamber to expose that weakness. It's not a weakness that he has outside when he's just meeting the public. It's not a weakness at rallies. And so we need time in the chamber to expose him of that. The prorogation causes us problems. And a general election without extra time of showing that weakness and incompetence up causes us problems. But equally, a prorogation that we're about to have already causes the same thing. So you could argue, let's go straight in. But that's another question. What's happened this week is that we have managed to get this bill through. No one quite trusts Boris to actually implement it. The reason we rushed it through now and not later is because there's enough time for a judicial review and legal actions against him if he did refuse to do it, as well as, of course, a vote of no confidence. But we want to have to be kind of belt and braces on this thing. And there are probably another 10 Conservatives that I've spoken to just in the last few days who said now wasn't the right time to act against Boris, but if it looks like he is actually going to crash us out, there's still time that they will also make moves to stop him. So there is a big discontent on the Conservative side. I hear that the 1922 committee, the Conservatives backed bench committee last night, was stormy at best, people shouting, angry, upset about what Boris is doing to their party. You remember all that anger that existed with some of the centrists and right-wingers in the Conservative Party when Jeremy came in?
In the Labour Party, when Jeremy came in.
You're seeing that in reverse now, but Boris is actually ruthless. Jeremy, they feared, was ruthless, but actually he's a very kind person. Hasn't deselected anyone, but Boris actually does it.
The great Tory purge.
Yeah, he's done it.
Let's talk a bit about the vote on Monday that will happen again. We think it's on the order paper, as I understand it, that there will be a proposal for an immediate general election that the government will bring. Now, as you just said, there is clearly a prospect, if we got to October, that the Johnson government would be brought down because he would be going for no deal and Tories would probably no confidence him in that context. But the thing is, nothing in this whole situation changes the dynamic without an election. You know, so there was this idea a little while ago that you would have a new government of national unity and then you would have a referendum. But unfortunately, you know, if we got Prime Minister Corbyn in, he wouldn't have the numbers in this parliament to legislate for a referendum anyway, so that doesn't really work
either. He might have the numbers to legislate for a referendum, actually. It's not the legislating of referendum that I'm particularly worried about. I'm worried, first of all, about forcing a referendum on this government, which I think there is, you could corral the numbers to get even. But I think a referendum where Boris Johnson has the levers of government, uses that as a propaganda arm, will be even worse than the referendum
we
had last time.
Absolutely.
So the only option of a referendum, which is my preference actually before a general election, the only option is a government of national unity.
Yeah.
The problem is that I think a government of national unity will only last a few weeks at best.
Yes.
And that's not because actually of the Europe question, that's because of all the other stuff that you just have to tick over, all the day-to-day stuff. And that is where we will fall down. You have to decide the limits of universal credit every year. Clearly, a Corbyn government would transform that. You don't need legislation for that, but that would really rile the Conservative who have been purged, for example. And so you would get a situation where it's very difficult. In an ideal world, I would have it that you kind of Jeremy would be leading the government, or even Jeremy could, I could even cope with Jeremy as Deputy Prime Minister in a Winston Churchill Attlee-esque kind of Churchill, you get all foreign affairs and war, and Attlee gets all domestic policy.
So who would be the Winston Churchill in that parent partnership?
Yeah, I don't know. You could have kind of you could have kind of Nicholas Soames or something. Yeah, but I just don't think anyone's going to do that, and they wouldn't do it for any more than a few weeks to get the,
and the
extension.
Is it set in stone that 22 weeks is the minimum amount of time you need to plan for?
No, you can do a referendum as a snap, but the Electoral Commission have said that they don't believe it would be safe in terms of the outcome being fair if it was any shorter. And so it's very difficult to make that argument for it to be shorter. Yeah. And so it does mean that you come back to this argument that for a referendum you need a change of dynamics of what you've got at the moment. The risk with the general election is even if a general election returned exactly what we had at the last general election, it would mean basically Boris gets his hard deal through. Because, of course, you've purged all the soft remainers in the Conservative Party and the wets, as Thatcher would have called them, and you have meant that you brought an embodied Conservative Party back with the DUP and they'd managed to get through whatever they want. So the only prospect of an election is if you actually manage to make further gains. Now, we will lose, and the Conservatives will also lose, to the SNP in Scotland. And so you could imagine a Labour-SNP kind of government, maybe. Now, the problem is that our Scottish colleagues will be absolutely apoplectic at any thought of that because of the difficulties that they've had with them. And the SNP are not a socialist party, but we are in bizarre times. I think working with the Liberal Democrats is even harder now because of their appointment of, you know, Philip Lee and others. It becomes quite difficult to imagine a party that is basically becoming a Cameronite party to suddenly form a stable coalition with. So you're really having to talk about Labour being really the biggest party with a supply and confidence with the SNP, which you could probably do, but a supply and confidence, or maybe supply and confidence with SNP, Plaid and the Green. But as soon as you've got to include the Liberals in that, you start to really become difficult in your domestic policies that you want to do. And in 6 months, you're going to end up crashing before you get to the referendum date. So there's risk in every single scenario you go down. There are two choices, or two things that, from a Labour perspective, we must aim to do. One is we must aim to undermine and weaken Boris Johnson before we get to the poll. So that's spending time scrutinising him in Parliament, which he's bad at, but that's also showing that he's actually unable to crash us out before at October. So he's lost his kind of va-va-voom. Okay. And the second thing is unite the progressive left, remain socialist vote. And that needs to be done. And I think actually it's started to happen already. You've already started to see some small shifts of people saying, well, Jeremy is showing leadership now, we are feeling like the party's come to the place. But that takes a little while for it to happen naturally. Now, you could try and say, well, if we have the pressure cooker of a general election, it will make it all go faster. But you could, on the other side, you could say a pressure cooker of the general election will just mean that before that relationship is solidified, you end up crumbling it all away. I don't know what the right or wrong answer is on this. I think most of my peer LP colleagues are in the situation of saying they don't trust Boris. We can't trust Boris because he's a proven liar, sacked twice for lying. So therefore, you cannot rely on anything that he would play fairly, not even in an election, play fairly. And therefore, you probably are in the stage of forcing an extension if he refuses to do that, putting a government of national unity in for a day, even if it's just for a day, and then calling a snap election. And you know, therefore, that he hasn't got the levers to lie and manipulate and to break British democracy, because I think many of us do not believe that even in a general election he will play fairly.
Head of News and Current Affairs at Channel 4 has called Boris Johnson a known liar who is copying Putin's approach to the media and says it's the responsibility of broadcasters to challenge politicians when they're not being truthful.
Back at the protest, we asked Another Europe's Michael Chesham for his thoughts on whether the opposition parties should delay a general election.
It's a genuinely tactical question. Being on the anti-Brexit left of the Labour Party, you tend to find yourself definitely saying exactly the same things as all of the people around you who you expect to be on your side. This time I think it's somewhere where I think Another Europe's membership will split, and I think it's where listeners to this podcast will probably split as well. So it's an interesting question. I tend to lean towards a longer period and a later election. That is purely tactical. That's about a few things. Firstly, students, student registrations. You'd never call a national, as a previous NUS organiser I know, you never call a national student demonstration in any earlier than November, because you want to sort of get students settled, and if you want them to register to vote, that's probably going to be useful there. The thing that can go either way is, what does this stewing period? There's this argument that we're leaving Boris to stew during the conference recess, where he's been instructed by Parliament to go and seek an extension to Article 50, but won't do it. He's technically in breach of the law. He can't call an election. He's stuck. The question is that good or bad for us? And I'm really on the fence and I don't know. It could be really damaging to him. However, will Labour always have the week that it's just had? Will we be able to continue to mobilise in the same way that we have done in the past week over the next month? And will Boris Johnson simply use it to build the Parliament versus the people narrative? Simply use it to sort of bang his own drum and to announce popular policies? Well, I guess I'm not really sure. Yeah, the big advantage of shifting it later is, of course, that we hit Labour Party conference. And now, the Europe has done a lot to prepare for Labour Party conference. We've got, you know, many dozens of CLPs submitted policy on it. We've got a lot of different kinds of text. So we'll be able to put a vote on Labour policy that will go all the way from either backing Remain in any referendum all the way through to an outright revoke position. Or, you know, we could look at some kind of immediate referendum with Remain versus renegotiate on the ballot. We've got a text that does all of that, which could be up for consideration. But the fundamental thing is, Labour will do best when it is in the best place to unite the Remain vote behind it. And if we aren't given space to democratically change Labour's policy, somebody else will be holding the pen, and that somebody else will not necessarily be as pro-Remain as we are, and will not necessarily fall in with that strategy.
Many Another Europe is possible supporters, and we hope podcast listeners are Green Party members. And interestingly enough, after a stonking showing in the local elections, there is a very strong case that they are best placed to defeat the Tories in Lewis. We asked Lloyd about it because his constituency is next door.
On today's programme, you had some nice words to say about the Green candidate in Lewis.
I was asked what Labour should do, and I said Labour will, of course, stand, and we'll have to stand. But, and I stood in 2015 in Lewis, and I'm a Lewis boy, that's where I grew up, and I share part of Lewis District as part of my constituency with Kemp Town and Peacehaven. But the Greens got the most votes, more than the Conservatives, at the last local elections. The Greens have now formed the administration in Lewis District Council with a Labour coalition and the Libs in fourth. And I think the Greens stood down last time. We don't, for the Liberal Democrats. The Liberals put an awful candidate up, no offence to her, but she just didn't have the root in the local community. And what you need with Lewis is you need a local parish councillor that's become a local district cabinet member, someone like that. That's how Norman Baker, the last Liberal, won it, building up from the base. The only candidate that's coming forward at the moment, Labour haven't chosen ours yet, so we might put a candidate that's similar up, of course, but ignoring that question, the only candidate that so far is seen to be meeting that is Johnny Dennis, who's the Green candidate, and I would urge Liberals very much to consider him very closely. As I said on the Today programme, of course, as a Labour member, I would vote for the Labour candidate, and Labour as a national party has always said that it has to stand everywhere, but we have been clear we will not plough resources into seats where we don't have a chance of winning. We will plough them into our key seats, which in Sussex is not Lewis.
Right. Good to hear.
Lovely.
Great.
Thanks so much for talking to us.
That concludes the podcast for those listening on the podcast platforms. The podcast has had a fantastic year, but we hope there's much more to come. To keep it sustainable and to expand, we need your help. That's why we've introduced Extra Time, which is available for paid-up members of Another Europe is Possible. To join the campaign, go to anotheryourope.org/join. In this week's Extra Time, we ask Anna and Lloyd what their plan is for real democracy now. How do we transform our politics to fix this constitutional crisis? Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast platform. It makes a really big difference to our ability to reach new listeners. You can also contact us on podcast@anothereurope.org with feedback and suggestions for new content. We'll be back very soon. See you then. So we asked Anna for her views on Britain's arcane political system and how we can transform our democracy.
I think what's happened in the past week, like, one of the things it's been is they've been confusing, hearing things like prorogation, royal assent, how the Prime Minister can go to the Queen to ask to suspend Parliament. It is just a very bizarre system that needs someone to, well, us collectively to look at it and try to, like, actually put some rules in place.
And it's better in Poland, right?
Well, we have other problems. It is the actual system. Like, yes, we have an elective head of state, like, you know, not someone who's, like, appointed by God or whatever. Definitely, I would say, in the long term, I want to see a republic. I don't want to see a House of Lords. I want to see an elected second chamber. I want to see voting rights expanded to migrants, because why should people like me not get the vote? Also, I think if we're thinking seriously about democratizing our system, we also have to think about economic democracy, because when vast inequality exists, there always will be power imbalances. So I say redistribution, I'll say public ownership, and these things are connected.
Lloyd took inspiration from our European neighbours.
So the first reform that I would take, which is something that I wouldn't have said 5 years ago when I lived in Brussels, but I actually think Belgium has an interesting approach for us to take in terms of their federalisation system, and the fact that the federal units of Belgium have the ability to take part in international discussions and international negotiations and have a block on international negotiations. So you would have a federal Britain, of which Scotland has the ability to block us leaving and joining international treaties and fair trade deals. Likewise, parts of England, and I suspect you'd have to cut up England into the old counties or something like this, you know, kind of all the Wessexes and the Northumbrias and all that kind of stuff. But you would have a country of relatively equal-sized units that would be able to be in a kind of almost confederation, is what they have in Belgium, actually, although they don't call it a confederation. I think that's where Britain needs to go. You could see then a way of incorporating some of our territories and Gibraltar, etc., better into that, into a system where we have true democracy in the country, but also you don't have the ability for the large landmass of England to drag out other areas that have other particular needs. And I think that would be a first step. I think you also have seen the need for some sort of written clarity in processes. Now, some people say that that would mean we're in the courts all the time. I think a constitution needs to be based around processes more than kind of policies. You know, the human rights bits of a constitution should actually just be the European Convention. That's what we basically have at the moment. But processes to say, this is how a government is selected, this is how an election is called and happens, this is how many days things happen, and if there are extraordinary circumstances, this is how changes in extraordinary circumstances are agreed. And that needs to be written down. And of course it can be changed by Parliament by Act. And then finally, we need to find a way of balancing the House of Commons and the House of Lords better. And we need to do that to sometimes empower the Lords, actually, where they are probably not involved in the cut and thrust. And the Lords' proposal is a very good one, actually, which is that you have the Lords elected on a 15-year term, a third of them, according to the national vote at the last election. So you have every 5 years a third selected according to the national vote, and they last a 15-year term, and those people are not allowed to stand for re-office. They're not allowed to stand then, but they're barred from standing for Parliament for a period of time. They're not going to just be people that are in and out of politics. And you will have a body of people that have a democratic mandate there to be able to do certain stuff, but not with a careerist mandate. And along with then introducing, say, AV in the Commons, you would have a more balanced Parliament, and you would have a Parliament where, rather than at the moment where we're going into the election, where we're really worried about this kind of, people are talking about a ticket election, you know, kind of, do we need to have progressive alliances and regressive alliances, and are the UKIP and the Brexit Party and Tories going to form one slate, and do we need to form... If you had a proper AV plus, which was what Jenkins proposed originally with the reforms that Blair commissioned, we would then have a system where I, as an MP, would know how many Greens had lent me their vote, and I could respect that properly. But at the same time, Greens know they're not wasting their vote by voting Greens, and I don't have to do this kind of horrible tactical vote squeeze message, which at the moment is a reality. But it doesn't ever feel nice, because you're not being genuine about people's views. You're just kind of threatening them with, I'm not as bad as that monster over there. And that's not good politics.
You gave us the full programme.
No, I'd actually forgotten about reforming First Past the Post, but yeah.
You've forgotten about it?
I'd completely forgotten about it.
It would solve a lot of our problems with this election coming up.
AV plus, doesn't the plus is a proportional list element as well? I like the Belgium model of decentralisation downwards, but then the different units in the federal structure also are looking upwards as well. That's like a nice another Europe.
Often when
fix.
We talk about decentralisation, we kind of say, "Oh, well, international affairs clearly needs to be at the very top, and you know, kind of worrying about social security and pensions needs to be at the bottom." Well, the Belgian model, pensions is done by the federal state, and you know, you reverse that, because actually it doesn't, just because it's international doesn't mean that it needs to be done by some kind of overarching king or, you know, kind of prime minister. Actually, it needs to possibly even involve people from the grassroots even more, particularly in a more globalised world where people want to preserve things like free movement and want to preserve things like rights for migrants.
Do you think there's a potential to popularise some of these bits? I mean, the problem with constitutional reform is it immediately gets stuck in the minutiae of what people change, and then people have a massive argument over it because everyone's got their different models. But in 2017 general election, the Labour manifesto was constitutional convention. So basically you kind of park all of the debates and you say, hey, we're going to have a lovely constitutional
But that was the
convention.
97 election manifesto where we said we would commission the Jenkins Commission to look at electoral reform. And then when we suddenly realised we didn't really need the votes of the Lib Dems, and Blunkett and others hated that, they ditched the outcomes of the report. So I think it's right to have a constitutional convention. You need to do it through kind of the idea of citizens, assemblies, etc., all that kind of stuff that is being talked about at the moment. But I do think you need some concrete agreements for how you achieve change, and commitments that you can't accept the status quo as you have it at the moment.